This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
In his famous 1925 book, Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler coined the term the big lie. This lie, he said, should be so colossal that no one could believe anyone, quote, could have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously, end quote. This is Alex Smith. I am sorry to report the government of Japan, the Prime Minister of Japan, has resorted to the big lie, trying to cover up the ongoing nuclear disaster at the Fukushima No. 1 nuclear power plant. On December 16th, Prime Minister Noda announced all reactors at Fukushima had reached the safe and stable state of cold shutdown. The accident is over, he said, and carry no further significant danger to the public of Japan or the world. We'll talk to nuclear industry expert Arne Gunderson about this lie and the truth of Fukushima. So much to hear, to absorb, to know deeply. Here is the big lie as carried on NHK English Language TV from Japan.
The Japanese government says it's taken a step forward on the long road toward decommissioning Fukushima Daiichi. Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda held a news conference on Friday to announce that the nuclear plant's damaged reactors are in a state of cold shutdown. That means temperatures are below 100 degrees Celsius.
原発それ自体につきましては、専門家による
For the nuclear power plants, the experts verified the nuclear power plants thoroughly to conclude that the cooling water circulates in a stable manner and the temperatures at the bottom of the reactor and inside the containment vessel stay below 100 degrees Celsius. Even in the event of an accident, radiation level at the periphery of the plant can be maintained low. And this was technically confirmed by experts. With this, we had a meeting today at Nuclear Disaster Response Headquarters chaired by myself. And this meeting confirmed that the reactors achieved a state of cold shutdown. The accident is now under control.
Our guest was a nuclear industry executive for 30 years. He's an expert witness and a principal of Fairwinds Associates in Vermont. Arne Gunderson, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. You know, Arne, Japan's Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda has announced the nuclear reactors at Fukushima Daiichi are in cold shutdown. Before we talk about Fukushima, why don't we start with an explanation of what cold shutdown means?
I don't know that there's a term you learn in engineering school that defines it. But to me, it means when a nuclear reactor routinely shuts down and the control rods fall into the nuclear core or shot in from the bottom in the case of a boiling water reactor, the chain reaction has stopped and the fuel configuration is normal. At that point, the water cools down to less than 200 degrees, and you can open the reactor up and work on removing nuclear fuel. So part of the explanation is the water has to be at less than 200 degrees. The other part is that it's in a closed system inside a nuclear reactor. And the third part is it usually applies to nuclear fuel being in the reactor. I've also heard it applied to when the nuclear fuel is moved into the fuel pool and there is no fuel in the nuclear reactor. Any condition when the nuclear reactor is open and the system has integrity and the water temperature is less than 200 degrees or 100 degrees centigrade is considered cold shutdown.
So are the reactors at Fukushima in cold shutdown?
Well, it meets part of the definition. The 200 degree number, the water that's oozing out of the buildings at Fukushima is at 200 degrees. But cold shutdown assumes you know where the nuclear core is and assumes you can see the nuclear core, which is not the case at Fukushima. The nuclear core in a reactor, if the water surrounding each of the bundles, which are about the thickness of a pinky, is at about 200 degrees, well, the nuclear fuel is going to be at approximately 200 degrees as well. At Fukushima, the puddle of nuclear material on the bottom of the reactor and now on the bottom of the floor of the containment is not, the center of that puddle is nowhere near 200 degrees. It's likely at 3 or 4, even as much as 700 degrees. So there's a hot molten mass, may not be molten, I shouldn't say that, a hot mass, and above it there's water, and there's enough water to stay below the boiling point of water. But that does not, to me, mean it's cold shutdown.
And an article published at the tech media site CNET seems to add another wrinkle. It says cold shutdown means, and I quote them, that radiation exposure is limited to 1 millisievert per year at the site's boundary. I hadn't heard that before, but given the radioactive rubble and the broken buildings and the 3 meltdowns, is that low level of radiation possible around the Fukushima site?
No, it's not. I had not heard that definition either, but we have to remember that these buildings are still giving off billions of becquerels of radiation every day. You know, the steam, especially from units now 2 and 3, is still oozing out of the building and contaminating the site and off-site areas to the tune of billions of disintegrations per second every day. So if that's a criteria, that's another one they failed on. You know, it assumes, cold shutdown assumes there's a system in which the fuel is stored. And in engineering terms, a system has no holes in the side of it. And, of course, the reactors at Fukushima have gaping holes in the bottom of them. So at best, it's a misnomer. But I actually think it's more like, as I say in our latest video, it's more like George Bush declaring mission accomplished. And in fact, you know, it was a PR ploy to make people look the other way. In fact, this problem is going to continue for months and years to come.
Well, in a press conference December 16th, the Minister of the Environment, Goshi Hosono, said, quote, "No one knows where the fuel is, but I'm confident it is cooled." They don't have any temperature gauges down there, wherever the fuel is, down in the concrete, do they? Do they have any idea what the real temperature is of this fuel, as you say?
I'm sure right at the top of the fuel. If you imagine this thing as a blob, and there's 70 tons in this blob, so 70 tons of molten fuel. The surface that's in direct contact with the water is at 200 degrees. But there's about a megawatt of heat coming out of that. That's 1 million watts, or the equivalent of 10,000 100-watt light bulbs. So if you put 10,000 100-watt light bulbs in the center of a molten mass, it's going to be much hotter than 200 degrees. As that heat moves outward and comes in contact with more and more material and cooler areas, eventually it's going to hit 200 degrees at the point of contact with the water. But the center of that blob is clearly, as I said before, and I'm using Fahrenheit, you know, it's you know, 600-700 degrees Fahrenheit. Has to be.
According to the Asahi Shinbun newspaper, also published December 16th, the Japanese government announced, quote, "The accident is over." Is it?
No, it's not over. I heard that too, and it was so saddening to believe that they believe that, or that they're trying to confuse the Japanese public into believing that the accident is over. It will be over 40 years from now when the nuclear fuel is removed. But until then, there's two sources of radiation that's being released. One is upward as gas. And we're seeing that, you know, the steam that comes out of these reactors, especially at night, you know, the nights are cold and the air is moist. You'll still see steam coming out of the unit 1, 2, 3, and 4, especially 2, 3, and 4 now. That steam is not just steam, but it's also carrying over isotopes like cesium. Now, I think that problem will go away in the next 5-6 months because they're going to build enclosure buildings around these buildings and filter the steam and then pump it up a stack. So most of the airborne problem will go away in, let's say 6 months. But the bigger problem is now you've got hundreds of tons of radioactive water, not just in the containment, but the containment is leaking sideways into other buildings. And those other buildings are now contaminated. As a matter of fact, TEPCO just announced they found another 230 tons of radioactive water where they hadn't expected to find it. So that the net effect is that the core is going to ooze not just cesium and strontium, but also plutonium and uranium is going to be in that water. But it's leaking into the concrete and into the ground and into the ocean. And then TEPCO, of course, is taking on the order of 4 cubic meters a day per reactor, so about 12 cubic meters a day of water, and running that through filters and pumping that water back into the nuclear reactor to cool it, to maintain the water at 200 degrees. Those filters now, think of a giant Brita filter, if you will, those filters are going to be incredibly contaminated, to the point where people can't go near them. And no one's really addressed, what the heck are we going to do with these filters? Where are we going to store them? Because they're not just going to contain cesium, but they're going to contain plutonium as well. So it's not a 300-year problem, but it's a 10,000-year problem. What do we do with all these filters?
Is there still a possibility of a further explosion at the site?
Yes. The top of the nuclear reactors has a hydrogen bubble. And TEPCO is injecting into the nuclear reactors nitrogen. And as long as the nitrogen injection system works, there won't be an explosion. If you recall, that you could go inside the Hindenburg when it existed and light a match, and the match would go out because there wasn't any oxygen. So what TEPCO is hoping for is that they'll continually put enough nitrogen into the reactor so there's no oxygen. As long as it's hydrogen and nitrogen, there won't be an explosion. If the nitrogen injection system is not working right, now you've got hydrogen and oxygen there, and it's possible to have the slightest spark in a hydrogen-oxygen reaction will cause an explosion. So if TEPCO does everything right and continues to inject nitrogen, we'll be okay. But the minute that nitrogen system breaks or it doesn't work properly, it allows oxygen to be released, and that can be dangerous.
What if the nuclear fuel escapes the containment and reaches the water table? Could we have a China syndrome?
You know, I looked at that on a video we produced about a week ago, and I don't think a China syndrome is likely, because the heat from this 70-ton blob of uranium is only about a megawatt, and that's over the entire 70 tons. So that had it fallen into, for instance, a crater at the bottom of the reactor, had there been a place for it to pool instead of a flat surface, it could have worked its way down. But I think it's spread out enough so that this 1 megawatt of power is distributed over the floor enough that it probably doesn't have enough heat to continue to work down into the ground table. It's still possible. I'm not suggesting it's not impossible, but I don't think it's likely. You know, but I submit that it's, who cares? The fact of the matter is the radioactive water is also carrying plutonium and uranium and all these other isotopes, and they are leaking into the groundwater and into the ocean anyway. So while we don't have a China syndrome, we're putting that same contamination into the groundwater and into the ocean by another vehicle.
I know you have a new video about this cold shutdown posted at your site at fairwinds.com. What are some of the angles you cover?
A couple things. We looked ahead. You know, it's the end of the year, and a lot of people are retrospective, but we tried to look ahead and came up with three areas of concern. The first is seismic issues on site. If there's a serious aftershock, you know, 7.5 or worse, all of this jury-rig piping is likely to fail. And TEPCO's admitted that they have 40 hours to get the piping working again, essentially 2 days to get the piping working again, or else a meltdown will occur. In other words, these things will have steamed off all of the water, and the China syndrome will occur. So a major earthquake can, one, topple Unit 4 or cause the piping in Units 1, 2, and 3 to fail, which can produce a meltdown even now. So we're not out of the woods. You know, that's another issue with this issue of cold shutdown. You know, there's like implied stability here, and this is not really a stable situation. So that was number one. The other two were exposure off-site, and they're gross underestimations of exposure to the people in Fukushima Prefecture and even as far as Tokyo. We're finding the air filters on cars in Fukushima Prefecture are so radioactive that if they were in the United States or Canada or Europe, those air filters would have to be disposed of in a solid radioactive waste landfill. Now, those air filters are just as contaminated as people's lungs, so that we've got essentially the body burden inside a person is enormous and likely to cause cancer. So we have a concern about the long-term health effects from this exposure, and I think it's being minimized by TEPCO, the Japanese government, and the International Atomic Energy Agency. And the last question on the video, this forward-looking video, things to expect in 2012, is what are we going to do with all this incinerator waste? The Japanese are burning all of this contaminated material in local industrial incinerators, and they're really not made for this job. There's an example. On the 14th, a newspaper in Japan published a story about a tarp that had been left on a lawn in Tokyo back in March and April, and then it was rolled up next to a school. And they looked at the tarp and discovered that it had 100,000 disintegrations per second per kilogram of the tarp. Well, the Japanese solution to that was to burn it, but it was so radioactive they couldn't. So they're bringing in tons of clean material and then cutting the tarp up and adding it to the clean material so that on average the amount of radioactivity that they burn per pound or per kilo will be acceptable. But the net effect is it's still the same amount of radiation, and it's going up out the stack, and it's going into the ash at the bottom of the incinerator. And what do they do with that incinerator waste? They put it in Tokyo Bay. So landfills now in Tokyo Bay are becoming contaminated with cesium and strontium and other isotopes because of this incineration process. And I submit that's a violation of something called the London Convention. Back in the 70s, Greenpeace was very effective in getting a convention approved, which Japan is a signatory to, which bans dumping in the ocean. And this is just a clever way around dumping in the ocean.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is nuclear industry expert Arne Gundersen. Arne, the American Deputy Secretary of State Thomas Nides was in Japan for the happy occasion announcing cold shutdown. He congratulated the Japanese government, and he appears to be heading a delegation seeking business contracts for more decontamination work. Why is the American government so quick to back up these Japanese claims?
I think if you remember the old movie, All the President's Men, where the Woodward and Bernstein are chasing after President Nixon, and Deep Throat says, follow the money. I think that's what it's all about. There's both the Japanese government, the American government, and the International Atomic Energy Agency are all marching lockstep trying to minimize the significance of Fukushima. And, instead of being worried about the population's exposure to radiation, they're worried about minimizing the financial exposure to Japan and Tokyo Electric. And I don't think that's a fair trade-off. I think there's too many business interests that want to promote nuclear that are controlling the argument now. And I think the Japanese people have been pushed out of the argument. The reason, I think, is because TEPCO has an undue influence on the Japanese government. It seems to me that there's been a cozy relationship there dating back for decades, and it's impossible for the Japanese government to think of life without TEPCO. This problem could be mitigated if they sold TEPCO, and I've been advocating, call it bankrupt, sell it, and use that money to properly fund a cleanup. And the Japanese government is refusing to let TEPCO go bankrupt.
I know there are more Mark I reactors in the United States, the very same design as at Fukushima 1. How is the struggle going to make them safe or to shut them down?
Well, the NRC just accepted in part a petition on Mark I reactors. The release just came out in the week right before the 16th of December, and it's gradually working its way through the press right now. About half of the petition's technical issues were accepted by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for review, including how much waste is in the storage pool and a lot of technical arguments. So the 8,000 petitioners in the United States should be reasonably happy that the NRC is considering evaluating a half a dozen technical issues. But the opening paragraph of this NRC 2.206 petition basically says that we're not going to shut them down while we're doing this technical evaluation. So the battle of getting the NRC to address these technical issues has in part been won. The citizens have identified numerous technical concerns, and the NRC has agreed to look at them. But the broader issue of, well, should we shut them down in the meantime, the NRC is refusing.
Meanwhile, there is a public fight going on within the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. What is going on there briefly, and what does that mean for reactor safety in the United States?
Well, there's five commissioners that are appointed by Congress. Four of them wrote to the White House saying they didn't like the way the chairman was running the commission. And there's been a lot of 4-1 votes recently. The four are very much pro-industry, and the chairman, I don't think, is an anti-nuke by any means, but he's more safety-conscious than the other four. The ringleader in this is Commissioner Magwood, and before he was appointed, 100 environmental organizations petitioned Congress to prevent him from being appointed. In fact, one of his clients, before he was a commissioner, was Tokyo Electric. So I don't really think the chairman is some sort of rabid anti-nuke bent on shutting down the nuclear industry as these four would propose, but his focus on safety has been frustrating to the four who really are much more of a pro-industry bent, of course, led by this ringleader, Commissioner Magwood.
Arnie, have I missed something important? Is there something you would like to add as we wrap up?
Well, I guess this situation is going to continue unless the citizens of the world take control. To rely on the International Atomic Agency, Energy Agency, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in the condition they're presently in, is foolish. So I'm hoping, sort of next year, I've sort of dedicated myself to continuing to sound the alarm and continuing to encourage citizens to petition Congress more and more and more to be more objective when it comes to nuclear safety.
You have been listening to Arnie Gunderson, the nuclear industry executive who has become an expert witness and public voice on public power safety. Find his videos at fairwinds.com, and that fair has an E in it, so it's fairewinds.com. Be sure and support their important work. Arnie, thank you again for adding a voice of sanity.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.